Good morning, witches. This is the Witch Daily Show, coming to you from New Orleans, with host Tanya Brown. Our episodes span about 20 minutes long to give you just a little pop of magic. So, tune in, take a deep breath, and enjoy.
Good morning, witches. It is April 17th, 2024. It is Wednesday. I am Tanya, and this is the Witch Daily Show. Today's episode is brought to you by Grimoire Society. So let's get your day going with a little magic. We're talking about irises today, and we've already talked about the history, and we talked about its magical properties, but let's take a little bit more of a delve into its spiritual and symbolism. And this comes to us from bloomsybox.com. So the iris is not just a beautiful bloom to admire. It carries a profound narrative woven through various cultures and eras. The name iris translates to rainbow in Greek, reflecting the flower's variety of colors. Each hue communicates a different sentiment, making the iris a versatile medium for expressing emotions. Whether it's faith symbolized by blue irises or passion represented by yellow ones, the iris can convey messages that words often struggle to express. So let's talk a little bit about its meanings kind of around the world. So in Greece, the iris, like we said, is associated with the goddess Iris, who is known as the messenger between the gods and the personification of the rainbow. The Greeks believed that the goddess used rainbows to travel between heaven and earth, and they saw the iris flower as a symbol of her divine message. In Chinese culture, the iris is a revered flower, often associated with the promise of good news and the arrival of summer. The Chinese name for iris translates to purple butterfly, evoking images of transformation and grace. In Japan, the iris carries a host of symbolic meanings. It's often associated with purity and innocence and warrior spirit. The iris is a common feature in Boys' Day celebrations in Japan, where it symbolizes the hope for healthy growth and development of young boys, and the flower's sword-like leaves are believed to ward off evil spirits. In Victorian England, the language of flowers was at its peak and the iris held significant meaning. Victorians associated the iris with good news, valuing it as a symbol of communication and messages. And in France, the fleur-de-lis holds a special place in French symbolism. The fleur-de-lis, which means lily flower, is a stylized image of the iris, which has been a symbol of French royalty since the Middle Ages. They represented perfection, light, and life. Today, the fleur-de-lis is a cultural symbol of France, reflecting the nation's history and identity. And then finally, in ancient Egypt, the iris was seen as a symbol of resurrection and eternal life. The association comes from the flower's three upright petals, which were believed to symbolize the journey of the soul after death. And the iris's vibrant colors and regal appearance made it a fitting symbol for ancient Egyptians' beliefs about the afterlife. I love it. All right. So moving into some headlines, this comes to us from electricliterature.com. Seven poetry collections about the complexities of Black womanhood. And this is by Amber McBride. So she writes, "I went to high school with about 1,700 students and only 30 of them were Black. My mama lived in the country. She always had red clay under her nails. She talked with her siblings more than her schoolmates. And my grandma was tugged off the school bus at 14 to help with chores and got her GED. As for my grandma on my dad's side, she grew up in the city surrounded by Black folks, and her mother's experience was the same. Nevertheless, the stereotype, the monolithic Western way of looking at the Black woman, would have you thinking we all grew up the same, that there's no individuality, and it's frustrating to say the least." So this is a collection of poetry that you can take a look at. Amber McBride, author of Thick with Trouble, recommends poems that explore the nuances of gender and race. And there's a few that she mentions in here that talks about like witchcraft. So one is Woman Eat Me Whole by Ama Asantewa Dayeka. And basically the speaker in the poem is painfully aware of the double standard and pushes against the idea of what Black women are supposed to be. Then we have The Collection Plate by Kendra Allen, The Psalm of Girlhood and Its Complexities. Award-winning essayist and poet Kendra Allen inspects the mundane, the Black church, and the brutal and in this beautiful collection. Next, we have How to Carry Water, Selected Poems by Lucille Clifton. This author writes, I practice hoodoo, which means no recommendation list is complete without an ancestor included. How to Carry Water includes some of Clifton's most profound poems about the Black experience, including unpublished poems. And we also have an advertisement for Witch Wife by Kiki Pastrosino. And that is coming up in this as well. So yes, Witch Wife, often reading like a spell, Witch Wife is striking, mystical, and wildly imaginative. This collection also includes Sestinas and Villanelles that call ancestors to life and speaks to the history hidden in one's blood. The collection is empowering, honest, haunting, and haunted. Next, You Can't Talk About the Trees Without the Blood by Tiana Clark. If any of these interest you, check them out. But I obviously, because of the nature of this podcast, Witch Wife by Kiki Pastrosino is really calling. It's really beautiful. They write, in Little Gals, Pastrosino creates a setting that is both atmospheric and unsettling. Like many poems in this collection, often conjuring the unnerving, they come at night on membranous wings. I'm a soft deer browsing the wood with strands of willow in my pelt. So definitely check that out. All right, I'm going to throw this over to our moon correspondent. And after this break, we will talk more.
Hello to all of my astro friends. This is Serendipity, the Chicago astrologer, coming at you with your daily moon mantra for Wednesday, April 17th. The waxing gibbous moon gives an encore in Leo today. Here, the moon trines Mercury and squares a conjunction of Jupiter and Uranus. Mercury is still retrograde, so we're struggling to communicate effectively. The square to Jupiter and Uranus is causing some upsets as we try to navigate the shifts and changes that they're bringing to the table. We have to remember that we cannot control the situation. We can only control our reaction to it. So, allow things to develop as they must, and try not to get too far ahead of whatever is unfolding. Make sure to be circumspect in your communications, and make sure you understand the situation before jumping in. Your daily moon mantra is, the best thing about the future is that it comes one day at a time. This has been your daily moon mantra with Serendipity, the Chicago astrologer, signing off and reminding you, that you are in charge of your own destiny.
Humans have been obsessed with predicting the future ever since the dawn of civilization. We've watched the stars, gazed into crystal balls, thrown bones, read cards, and more, all in an effort to better understand ourselves and our place in this magical world. A Curious Future is your guidebook to a variety of divination practices. Did you know that you can divine with wine? Or that a simple pair of dice can give you prophetic insight? This book will help you predict the future through a variety of insightful and sometimes unusual techniques. A Curious Future by Kiki Dombrowski is available for order online from your local bookshop or wherever books are sold.
All right, we are back. So we are on day 3 of our mediumship series, and we are talking about different ways one can communicate with the dead. And we're going to talk a lot about divination tools and things of that nature. Now, in terms of using tools within mediumship, now everyone's going to be different, right? And I'm going to say personally, I kind of feel like when I use tools such as cards or pendulums, I feel like I'm tapping into a different skill than I am when I use mediumship. However, there are people who believe they're using the same tool, right? So I personally have known mediums that do cards, but then they're also communicating with like a buffer spirit, right? And yeah, everyone's different. That's all, you know? So let's talk about different ways to communicate with spirits. First, we have scrying. Now, scrying is going to basically encompass anything where you are gazing. Now, scrying is a little bit of essentially a distraction method, right? Whether you're looking into a pool of water or a flickering flame or a crystal ball, you're basically staring at something and then trying to unfocus on it, right? And this is a form of distraction. You're trying to distract yourself so that your brain can kind of push into the ether, the other world, and receive information and messages. So I typically consider scrying a distraction method. There's other distraction methods. There is automatic writing, automatic scribbling. I like to scribble a lot. There's the metronome, the thing. But yeah, I personally like to scribble if I'm doing like a meditative session, and it just helps me kind of disconnect a little bit. But yeah, I consider scrying a type of distraction to help your brain pull away from the physical world and push into the other world. Next, we have omens. So omens are going to be things like tea leaf readings, coffee ground readings, candle wax drippings, cloud gazing, anything where you're looking for like a symbol or a shape or some sort of symbolism, right? And so they say if you do tea leaf reading and you get a black dog, it could mean death. I think that's from, is that real or is that from Harry Potter? I don't know because I don't do tea leaf readings. But, you know, a baby could mean fertility, a horse could mean strength, or money could mean wealth, things like that. Those are omens. We're hoping that the symbol of this figure is going to bring us something in the future. And again, different types of divination that works with omens. Readings, so wine, wax, things like that. Cloud readings, tea leaf readings, things like that. Next, we have casting of lots. And this is going to be anything where you have something in your hand, you shake, 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 and you throw out and you interpret based off how those things fall. Those are going to be lots. So that can be runes, lithomancy, which is crystals, bone readings, anything of that sort of nature, where you're interpreting how things fall and how things lay. Sometimes I wonder if card readings would fall into lots because it's kind of the same idea. You're shuffling in your hands and then interpreting how things fall out. But for the sake of clean communication, I'm going to put those in a separate thing. So yeah, lots, runes, bones, anything that you shake, 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 throw out and interpret how they fall. That's going to be lots. Next, we have cards, cardomancy. This is going to be the use of cards. The most popular system is going to be tarot, followed by playing cards and Lenormand. And then everything else is considered oracle. For example, this Jane Austen tarot that we're reading, it has nothing to do with tarot. It doesn't have enough cards to be tarot. It's not the tarot system. I'm bothered. They call it tarot. It's an oracle deck. Tarot is a system. It is a system that exists, that is taken seriously, and all the decks called tarot should fall within that system. Same with Lenormand. Lenormand is a system, well-known, well-established. All decks that call themselves Lenormand should fit within that known system. Everything else, oracle cards. Essentially, having a tarot deck called tarot, but it's not tarot, or a Lenormand deck called Lenormand, but it's not Lenormand, is kind of like buying a deck of playing cards, only to find out half the cards aren't there and they're different. Like, you can't do what you need to do with those, right? So yes, tarot, Lenormand, playing cards, and then everything else is oracle. And again, tarot and Lenormand are set systems. You should be able to pick up any Lenormand deck or tarot deck and read them exactly the same way. Oracle card is going to be typically a specialized system that was created by the author for that one deck. I'm not a huge fan of using oracle cards to read. Professionally, I know I'll use them in some of my readings, the Witch Daily Show Oracle. But my biggest reason, especially if you're paying a lot of money, is you can't get second opinions. Because the odds of finding someone else who reads that oracle deck is, like, rare, you know? All right, next we have meditation and guided meditation. This is another way to communicate. We talked about this a little bit yesterday. And this is essentially not using tools, but instead just using your mind and trying to learn the practice and skill of shifting your mind from the physical into the ether to communicate with spirits. Really lucky this is something I can do. Do I do it a lot? No, because I don't want to mess around in there. You know, I've had some weird experiences in there. That is another story for another time. And I don't like to just go in there all willy-nilly. But if I have to, I will, and I can, and it just takes practice. Anyone can do it. It just takes practice. Meditation is a big part of that. Learning how to control your mind, learning to pull away from the physical, learning to pull away from this world is a really great way to start learning how to do that. Next, we have intuition, which, again, we talked a little bit about yesterday. These are more like gut feelings. I typically consider intuition something that you don't have to do anything to get. It just hits you. Those feelings, those gut feelings, things like that. That's another way we communicate with spirits. We may get a feeling about something, and it could be a message from them. And then next is something I've already touched on a little bit, spirit intermediary, which is essentially people who communicate with spirits using a spirit. And like I said, I think on Monday, I know of professional mediums who do this just because it's a little easier. It's almost like having an assistant, right? It's like being a celebrity and having an assistant. Like, they have to go through them first, weed out the unhelpful ones, and kind of get the information for you. It saves a lot of energy, effort, rest, and things like that. And I've known a few mediums who work that way. All right. So I hope that was kind of helpful. I hope you learned something. If not, I'm so sorry. Tomorrow, we're going to talk a little bit about how to find evidence of spirits. And then on Friday, I'm going to answer your questions, which I did not expect there to be so many questions, but there is. So we're going to talk about it. All right, witches. We are wrapping up this episode of The Witch Daily Show. I want to give a shout out to listener Sanri. Sanri, you insidious, insidious vampire. Jennifer DiMucci, you bedazzled, bedazzled vampire slayer. Love it. I love the feud we have going between Sanri and Jennifer. Casey, you spiffy golden banshee, and Pietra Simmons, you mystical, kind spider queen. Thank you for so much being Patreon supporters. I really appreciate it. And that's all I've got for you today. We do have a card pull from the Jane Austen tarot deck, which again, they call tarot. I don't consider it tarot. And we have 10 of spades. Let's see. 10 of spades. Judgment, awakening. Catherine Morland realizes that real life isn't a gothic novel when she visits Northanger Abbey. All right, that's all I've got for you. So we will talk again tomorrow.
Witches, we hope you have a wonderful day, full of joy and gentleness and confidence. Links for this week's episodes, our website, Patreon, along with a free daily card pull can be found at witchpod.com. One stop for everything we talk about. Now, take one more deep breath and have a great day.